Welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast, philosophies and strategies for an elevated life. I'm Tom.
And I'm Paulie. We interview world authorities and experts in health and wellness optimization, psychology and spirituality.
And we don't mind chewing the fat either, just the two of us.
If you feel like being part of a casual yarn about self-awareness and growth, pull up a chair because the coffee's still hot.
We'll see you on the inside.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another very cool episode. Tommy, how are we doing, my friend?
Mate, very good. Third time we've caught up in 3 weeks. I'm loving the consistency, I'm loving the accountability, and I'm loving our conversations.
Awesome. And you know, you brought up a really, really powerful word there, which is consistency. And what we are going to be touching on today is the power of exercise when it comes to, I want to say parenthood, and that's what we're going to be talking about, the challenges associated. And this is going to be the overarching theme when it comes to our chats. It's going to be the challenges that many of us are faced with when it comes to parenthood. Yep. And something as accessible as movement and exercise is such an incredibly powerful elixir to a lot of the challenges we experience. And so many of us are reaching towards pills or supplements or the next amazing magical program that is going to get us through these challenges in our lives. But ultimately, if you are not accessing the things that are right before you, that are right in front of you, that are very, very easy to access, movement, sunlight, water, connections with other human beings, then you're missing out on the lowest hanging fruit that you can possibly access. And if you're not doing that, there's no point in accessing all the one percenters out there that are wrapped up into neat and tight bows into very expensive programs, because yes, ultimately these are the lowest hanging fruits that are going to give you the greatest advantage as a parent.
Yeah, man, it's so true. We're probably doing our own now. If we had a marketing team, we'd probably be doing them a disservice. But you're exactly right. I feel like, you know, the programs that you know, coaches and therapists like yourself and I offer, you know, are the one percenters. You know, and you could probably tell I've never done a sales course in my life. But you're exactly right. Like, the lowest hanging fruit is free for all of us. You know, yeah. Good sleep, sunlight in the morning, a bit of movement here and there. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're so primitive. Our DNA is just, we're mammals, you know. This is 210 million years old, you know, our neurochemistry and our biology. And it's very obvious what we need as human beings. And I think we can get lost in our heads so often, thinking that we need to find the perfect exercise program or the perfect nutritional checklist, or we need to really figure our lives out. But what you said is exactly spot on, man. That's the 1% shit. You know, the real crux of healthy body, mind, and soul is in what we've discussed.
Spot on. It's doing the basics. And let's really just shine a light on the basics of, I want to call it movement, not exercise, because in my mind, at least, I can see a really big delineation between exercise and movement. You and I have both come from an exercise background professionally. We trained people to be in a very structured exercising environment. And there is nothing wrong with that. We all live busy lives, and we all kind of compartmentalize our lives into different brackets and different boxes, so to speak. So when you find yourself in a CrossFit box or a different gym box, like what I did there.
Yeah, I loved it. I was trying hard not to hold that in.
You know, it's sending a signal to you to be able to, you know, have that 30 minutes or 45 minutes of exercise and movement that you can actually give to yourself. But there's endless science out there that if you just limit yourself to that 30 minutes of high intensity exercise and you sit on your ass for the rest of the day, you know, you get out of bed, you slump into making yourself a coffee, and then you go into your car, you go to work, you sit at your desk all day, you come back into your car and you sit in front of TV all night, and then go back and do it all over again.
Yeah.
You're going to be in significant danger of dying early. and early, because sitting is, the as they call it, the next smoking. You know, it is something that is a really big danger. So let's shine a little bit of a light on movement and what movement can do for you as a busy parent. And, you know, I myself have a 15-month-old, so I remember still very clearly what it was like to be in those very, very early days. I have a 4-year-old as well, of those, you know, sleep, that sleep deprivation. And, you know, sleep is another topic that I would love to sink into, but that is not for today. Sleep, I consider, in terms of, we're all familiar with food pyramids, right? I like to look at ritual pyramids, you know, in terms of rituals and getting stuff right, sleep to me is right down the bottom of it. Not far from there is movement, because as you mentioned before, Tom, we're designed to move. If we don't move, we die.
Yes. You
know, we are beings that are either moving forwards or moving backwards. We're either living or we're dying. Yeah. And if we stay stagnant for long periods of time, we're just going to be dying, but really, really, really slowly.
Yes.
So, what I'd love to look at is not just how to structure a strength and conditioning program, which I suppose we can touch on, but what I'd like to look at is what movement means as a busy parent and how you can start injecting aspects of movement into your day where you didn't think they could have existed.
Yeah, awesome, man. I'm not sure about some of the, you know, the overall major pain points you see with your clients, but something that I certainly notice is a real almost, what's the word? Like a real issue with not being able to have enough time to do anything. Because obviously, and I don't know this from firsthand experience, but when you're a parent, you just got no time for anything. And there's almost like a, dude, what is that word? I'm dying here. It's not resistance, it's resentment. God, it took me a while. Yeah. I've had a coffee. I just, you know, I don't know what's going on there. A real resentment for not being able to get a morning routine done. But for one thing that what I've really noticed helps is if we throw out this idea of having any routine whatsoever, because who knows when the baby's going to start to cry or when it needs to be fed or the diaper needs to be changed, whatever it is. The nappy, I'm not American.
Good.
Exactly. But I think changing your identity and shifting that idea that exercise or movement is something that I need to tick off in the morning like a chore, as opposed to movement is something who I am, then anytime you have 5 minutes, there's an opportunity there, you know, and or 2 minutes, there's an opportunity there. Get your burpees done or go for a walk or have a quick dance, you know, something that I really think helps parents in that moment is shaking it all off and putting your favorite song on or something like that. And this is what we're really trying to tackle, you and I here, is that we're not asking for a six pack. We're not asking for a new 1RM on the squat. We're asking you to become someone who moves. And that's, if you've got a free moment, that's what's enjoyable.
And you touch on a really great point. Exercise and movement we need to take a step back from what that, like what we naturally would look at that as and what it has been kind of boxed into. You know, dancing is just such a wonderful example of what exercise can be. Not only is it the doing, but what are the chemicals that are going off inside of your body when you're doing this? There's been a lot of research done into blue zones and high incidences of vegetarians. And, you know, in many countries, dancing is a part of their ritual, their nightly ritual after having a big meal or something like that can play a massive role in their longevity for a number of reasons. But like first thing that comes to mind is so many of us will have like a heavy carbohydrate rich meal where we can spike our blood glucose level. Now, the best thing that you could possibly do after that is to do so, have some movement. If we're, you know, in countries that celebrate that type of thing, you'll have a meal and then you'll dance for half an hour with your community.
Yeah.
Others of us might want to take the dog for a walk around the block with our partner or on our own, whatever it might be. Something else that you may not have considered movement or exercise could be Cleaning up the house after you have a meal as well. That's going to do wonderful things for you to help digest your food and stabilize your blood glucose levels. Because if you're in that chronic blood glucose level state for too long, that's where you start to see really, really challenging health problems. And you start to get into that chronic state where you start moving into that kind of, I suppose, pre-diabetes and diabetic kind of realm bracket.
Definitely. And you know, I was thinking before about how deep into the reeds we want to get here with this. I know you and I love speaking about the neurochemistry when we catch up and get caffeinated and so forth. And you know, we don't have to go super deep into it, but I think it's worth understanding. People who are perhaps new to this topic might feel like it's a very long bow to draw to say that, you know, sitting down is going to, you know, reduce my life expectancy, and it's as bad as smoking is, and you know, it's hard to find that connection. But there's a couple of really interesting points. One of them you touched on before. We're designed to move, right? So right now we live in a world where we can actually bring life-saving and rejuvenating resources to us, sometimes at the push of a button, you know, with Uber Eats and so forth. Back when we were evolving hunter-gatherer times, if we weren't moving, that was sending a message to us that we were going to run out of food eventually. And so the two most important neurotransmitters in our brain and body, I think anyway, are dopamine and serotonin. Dopamine allows us to move forward towards resources that will keep us alive. Serotonin tells us when we're satisfied and when we're satiated and when we have enough. And if we're not moving, we're sending a very clear signal that we're going to start to run out of food and die. So it's very scary. So you do have that increase in cortisol. The other thing that I think is really interesting is there are studies that point to a high correlation or high association between being on social media or scrolling or being on technology and we're like breathing apnea. So we start to breathe more through our mouths, which increases our stress levels. You know, it gets us out of our parasympathetic nervous system and into that fight or flight arousal level. So most of us, I'd say 99% of the time when we're sitting down, we're using technology unless we're reading, you know, which is scary.
It's super scary. And you know, you think a couple of things jump to mind when when you use the example of social media. When we're sitting down, obviously in that hunched over kyphotic pose, obviously, you know, it pretty much forces us to breathe posturally through our mouths and with that stress reflex. But we're also more often than not experiencing stressful thoughts during this social media experience as well. You know, we're
Totally.
feeling less than, we're comparing ourselves to others. It may not be an instinctual reaction. I do digress, but like
You're right.
these things are so powerful. So, you know, you talk about access to food, these things that historically and evolutionarily wise, we have had to get off our asses and not just, hunt and forage all day to get. Sometimes we wouldn't get it, and we'd kind of go 24, 48 hours without eating, right? Hence the benefits of fasting, et cetera. But we've bred a people that are overfed and undernourished because we can, at a click of a button, have a burger turn up onto our doorstep and wash that down with a Coke and perhaps a donut at the end. Sure, getting energy into our system, but what profile of micronutrients are supporting our vitality and our longevity? We're getting the energy, which is what our bodies have needed for since we started to be able to survive and survive the winters. But we definitely need to start looking at the profile of micronutrients into our system as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, so much of this I think is very intuitive. You know, when you hear something like the amount of serotonin that is released into the brain and dopamine, is when you sit down and you eat, or after sex, or any of these very primal, facets of living, that is directly related to the amount of effort you've put into getting that reward. You know,
Yes.
so you see that, and we kind of all know that. You know, you feel shit after just eating a burger, and I mean, I'm actually quite hungry now, so what you said before sounds sensational. And it wouldn't be the first time I've pressed the Uber Eats button, but as soon as you finish that meal, you feel useless. But after a full day, you've been, you know, let's just say you've been really quite busy, but you've also been very productive, and as a result, you've fasted for a long time. You've got a really good workout in the night before. You've had some great connections with your friends and your family. You sit down for a meal, and you've got all this stuff done, and maybe a banana just tastes. You know, I've got this story. Siobhan and I, my partner, did a we did a 3-day bone broth fast. And it was pretty difficult. We hadn't kind of worked into it at all. We just kind of went cold turkey straight into it, which I certainly don't recommend. It's actually quite dangerous, which we found out later. But we were so hungry by the end of it. We were going to try 5, but we had to finish on the 3rd day. We were so hungry, and we had nothing in our home apart from an old packet of veggies. And I remember, and in my head, I'm thinking, oh God, this sucks. Whatever, you know, I'll just cook it and boil it. Siobhan was in bed. I had 2 bowls of veggies. We both tried a broccoli at the same time. Mate, it was the greatest tasting thing I still think I've ever experienced. And it speaks to that reward after effort, you know?
Absolutely. And you know, you mentioned something really powerful. It's like the dopamine hit that you get can often come at the at the point in which you are anticipating, something. You know, if you're anticipating this incredible meal or looking forward to it, that's why, it's so great when you book a holiday, you get that dopamine hit, or when you click purchase on Amazon or on something, you get that dopamine hit, and it's not necessarily as powerful when you're, that shirt comes in the mail and you see it. Am I right?
Totally.
And the neurochemistry associated with that has been proven over and over again. But when you work hard for something, right, and it finally comes and you earn that reward, then there's, from what I understand, there's things in place that really, really hardwire your ability, that reward center within you, which is what you're saying. This bloody green piece of broccoli is something
Yes.
you're able to really, really celebrate, and you still remember that taste till this day.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, for parents who have just listened to that, when you earn something, so let's just bring it right back to movement here, okay? Because you might, this certainly comes up in the clinic a lot. People say, oh, I've got this idea that I want to write this blog post, or write this book, or I want to start this new exercise program, or what have you. And then the next question usually follows is, well, what's the point though? You know, it's only 5 burpees. You know, it's only a walk around the block. It's only a dance to a song. Why bother? My response is always the same. It's because when you've done it, no one can take that away from you. You know, you've earned that. You did that. And I think one of the big things that really, really makes people feel like they've achieved something, which is akin to a sense of fulfillment, really, is when you finish what you start. You know, if I wake up and I say, all right, God, I've got 10 minutes today. Use that 10 minutes, do something. And then you can fall asleep that night. And when your head rests on the pillow, you go, I used that 10 minutes. I actually did that. You know, why bother read the book when I can listen to the audiobook? Why listen to the audiobook when I can read a 2-minute summary? Why read a 2-minute summary when it's only 2 minutes? It's like, but if you do that, you did that, you know?
And you've proven to yourself that you can do it. And even if it's putting your shoes on and going for a walk around the block, versus, in fact, this has been proven time and time again. We're filled with such this can-do attitude when we start this new health diet or exercise program, and we're like, I can take on the world. I'm going to run a marathon in a week, right? And it's more likely than not that you're going to give up on that marathon because you're not going to be able to do it immediately. Yep. But if you focus on the process over the outcome and you focus on what that process is, which is getting your shoes on, going for a walk for the 3 times a week for the first week, mm-hmm. and then building that up to a walk run for the following week. And then you slowly build up that that level of intensity and until you actually create a plan where you are running a half marathon or thereabouts over 6 months, then that's such a rewarding mechanism because you're then stepping into an identity of somebody and you're giving yourself time, you're giving your mind and your body time to believe that you can actually do that. And results come from shifts in identity. They don't come from somebody that you know jumps from being a couch potato to being a marathon runner in 5 days.
I mean, I love that you said the word identity. You know, it's a topic that you and I discuss a lot, and I think when you do focus on the process, you know because this comes back to this whole notion of, well, I don't know who I am. We know who we are based upon what we've done across time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like I can call myself a podcaster because there's a lot of consistency there, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you have that plan to run a marathon, you go, God, how am I ever going to do this? We immediately reflect upon what we've done because that gives us an idea as to what we're capable of. Mm-hmm. And if we look back on the past and we go, well, I was able to do 3 walks a week for 18 months, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe I can change that to 2 walks and a run. And then it's like, oh, well, maybe now that's not actually so impossible because I've got something back there. It's like you're building a Jenga tower every time you get that difficult thing down, you know. And in the beginning, it's tough because you might put one block down, you know, you've gone for a walk around the block. Then the next night you order that crazy donut and burger and the block goes away and you go, I'll never be able to build a tower here. But slowly, 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 a tower starts to emerge such that, you know, if you have a burger and chips every now and then, if you do whatever you need to do, you're taking one block away, but you've got so much consistency that's stacked on top of itself that shame's not really there, you know?
Yep.
So I think, I mean, maybe, you know, without segueing too much, but setting the bar low, I think is really important too.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's about, I think it's a sweet spot between at the beginning, as momentum begins to start to be generated, it's like a steam train setting up, right? If you are on a steam train, you know that it's going to take a while to gain speed.
Mm.
Those pistons are going to start moving, right? And that as the pistons are moving really, really quickly, the steam train takes a while to get off. And we need to understand that we're like that steam train. It's going to take a little bit of time. It's going to take a little bit of attention and confidence. But once you get those wins on the board, especially at the beginning, you start to believe. Yes. And then once you believe and that identity shift starts to take place, then you're like, actually, I am an athlete. I am somebody. I am a podcaster. I am a blogger. I am a whoever you are. You need to believe it first before you start moving that level of intensity. Yes. And once you believe, then you start to shift because, I mean, if you don't move it, you're not, eventually you're not going to get to where you want to be, right?
Totally.
But you need to believe first and you need to challenge yourself and you need to bring yourself into an environment that constantly reminds you of the ability to be able to move as well. You know, I did a podcast interview with Brock McLean, who's an ex-AFL footballer. Yeah. He has openly discussed mental health issues and he's just recently become a father. So congratulations, Brock. Mm.
Cool.
You know, he talks a lot about walking his dog and, you know, he knows how beneficial that is for his mental health.
Yeah.
And every single morning he walks that dog and he has his gear set up next to his bed. It's like shoes, socks, pants, jocks, T-shirt, All one on top of the other. So he makes his ritual as easy as a comp, and then leash on top of that,
Oh,
right?
wow, yeah. And
Yeah.
then dog.
And then dog. He sleeps with the dog on his face. Just as a reminder.
That's right.
So he makes that ritual as easy as it can possibly be for him to be able to get up and walk his dog first thing. And often we need those reminders. It's like if you want to play guitar, don't lock your guitar in your wardrobe. Don't, like if you want to, I don't know, become a nuclear scientist, have your have your textbooks out in front of you in your study. So it's there as a constant reminder to you because we need to rig our environment so it's set up. So if you are looking to go for a walk every day after dinner, have your runners visibly in a place where you know they're going to be after you finish your dinner so you can change into your runners or whatever you do to go for a walk and you can get out and go for that walk.
I love that. I think that's it's you know that's looking after future you, because future you is probably going to be tired, and that the less decisions that future you, the less obstacles rather that future you has to make, the easier it is for future you just to kind of stroll out. I think that's such a great thing. I even try to do that myself. I put my clothes out for the gym the night before because I know that future me is going to be sluggish and slow and he won't want to get out of bed. And, the harder it is for me to just roll out of the car, the easier it is for me to make an excuse that might stick. So that's a really good point. And I think, to something else you spoke about, mate, or spoke to rather, is that this is an unfortunate thing. But it is true in that motivation comes after action,
Sure does.
and we're all trying to find that motivating YouTube video or whatever it is to get us out there, or that new program that's going to be the thing. But really, it's doing the thing that then leads to motivation, which is interesting, without getting too philosophical. But what's interesting to me anyway is that motivation, because it comes after action, motivation is therefore relatively arbitrary, because doing the thing is what motivation was intending you to try to do anyway. So why not just get rid of the idea of motivation and just get used to doing the thing?
Quite a paradox, isn't it?
It
And
is.
we're dealing with all of these concepts surrounding being motivated to do something, but you're absolutely spot on. But we do need that validation. It's like to get up, do your exercise, using that as an example, and then we start to see results, and we start to validate our own selves, and we start to step into that new identity, and then that does begin to motivate us to stir and repeat. So next time you are looking for this special magical point of motivation and to get yourself up into gear, know that you need to start, and you need to start today, and it needs to be achievable. It needs to be something that you can do almost without thinking at the beginning, and then build on that in time.
Mate, that's a great way to finish off, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to continue talking about various different challenges that are presented, especially when it comes to parenthood. If you guys have any thoughts or suggestions for topics for us to discuss, we'd love to hear more and more about them. So you guys are welcome to post some comments in the various different social media channels that we end up posting this in. So yeah, looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Mate, always a pleasure. We'll chat next week, hey?
Sounds good, Tom.
See you, dude.